A5. Number 15A.
We gone out to truth. And what would you feel we have to see about penalty from the standpoint of truth? Yes?
Well, it would seem as though you might be penalized for not conforming to the ideal, but since truth is the ideal, we fall away from that.
Yes. So that we, if you mean in truth, because we cannot fall away from truth, we do not have to accept any penalty or to affirm. Yeah.
Not conforming to the ideal.
Yes. Uh-huh. Frank, what do you want to say?
I'm saying that a penalty is not a remedy for error.
Penalty is not a remedy for error. Uh-huh. Yes. Yes. And somebody else wants to say, yes?
That the penalty is an erroneous belief. Not a belief of truth.
Yes, so penalty is an erroneous belief, yeah? And what would you do about it if it's an erroneous belief from the standpoint of truth?
I don't have to subscribe to it.
You don't have to subscribe to it, quite right, yes?
No truth in it.
No truth in it? Yeah? Uh-huh. There is no penalty in truth, yes? I think that's a big point. Huh? Therefore, would you affirm penalty or would you deny penalty? Huh? I think in truth you would say, I deny the evidence of penalty. Yes, because truth is affirmative. And so because I think what Frank said, that error cannot work through penalty and penalty cannot work through error. Therefore, instead of accepting an erroneous sense of penalty, you, in truth, we affirm that there is no penalty, that we cannot suffer under penalty, that there is no effect of penalty. That's all truth, that there are no forms of penalty, and we deny to be under penalty. Truth has dominion, so we have the dominion to deny the penalty, the belief in penalty, the effect of penalty, the form of penalty, the channels of penalty, and we deny the whole gamut of beliefs in penalty. Mm-hmm.
It could also be said that the consciousness of truth has no consciousness of penalty.
Absolutely. That the consciousness of truth has no consciousness of penalty. Yes. That's very true, huh? Yes.
I think then we should also state that they are there, for there cannot be any belief in the penalty being subconscious and unconscious.
Yes. You mean, yes? Yeah, that's a good point. Because we feel that there is not only a conscious act of that brings penalty, but that there is ingrained in consciousness archetypal beliefs, subconscious beliefs that penalize us for old beliefs, for traditional beliefs, racial beliefs, national beliefs, that they are there and penalize us for belonging to that category. Yes, the collective unconscious, that is penalizing us. I think that comes up very much now in psychology, that all these people who have to go to the psychiatrist and practically every second now goes to a psychiatrist, and it's all because they are somehow under the impression of being penalized in a state of penalty, of curse, for something that is not their fault. Huh? And the investigation into the unconscious, the subconscious, the collective unconscious, into archetypal beliefs in Jung's theory, is just bringing up that we are penalized for what our forefathers have done, what our nation has done, what our race has done, what our religion has done, what has its course way back 2,000 and 3,000 years ago, that we are still under that curse and under that penalty. I think that's a big point, yes? That truth just does not affirm any form of penalty, huh? No matter if it's conscious or unconscious, collective conscious penalty or not, yeah? When, can you see how you free yourself, how you liberate yourself in truth from any kind of belief to be under a penalty by just consciously being conscious of truth that has only one ideal and is always acting according to its own ideal and therefore cannot, in no way can it do something that is wrong. Truth is always right. Therefore, that consciousness can never do something wrong, the truth consciousness, therefore there is no penalty for doing anything wrong or wrong. If we go to love, what could we see in love? Love is always at the final climax of our penalty.
Lack of fulfillment, feeling that as we go along through life we are not completely fulfilled, we are penalized for our actions.
Yes.
And love is not true.
Yeah. So it has no room anymore in the fulfillment of love. If we see love as complete fulfillment, then we see there is no room for penalty. Yes? But clearly, love makes void the whole belief of penalty. Yes? And if we would take a negative aspect of penalty with love, you would have to make a sentence.
That salvation of love is not going to allow anything from love to be damned.
Yes, yes.
It's only the final salvation of love.
Yes, that's a positive sense and a negative one.
There is no fear.
There is no fear of penalty in love, for instance. That's very, very necessary. That we know we have transgressed the law of matter. We know it. And we may fear that the law of penalty will work on us, and so that fear can be handled by love, to see that love knows no penalty. Yeah.
You were going to say more or less the same thing. As Christian scientists, we always fear our own thinking, or did. We always thought if we feared something, we're going to get it.
No. Enormously, huh? We always fear our own thinking, huh? Yes. Yes. Yeah?
The compensation of love wipes out all penalty.
All right, you can say that the compensation of love wipes out all penalty. Universal belief in penalty. Huh? The negative sense is that the belief in penalty is really a universal belief, that everybody believes in it. Huh? That's the negative sense. And so love frees us really from the universal belief in penalty. It's taking really care of the universal evil, universal belief, not just of the individual belief as we had in life, where we said we can either multiply our belief in penalty or diminish our belief in penalty. That's an individual. Whereas in love, it's a universal concept that there is a universal belief in penalty. And only love can handle that, because love alone is universal. And therefore in you see, it's so nice in practice. I think next year I won't like to take a whole seminar just on Christian Science practice and use the seven synonymous term, show practice. You see, it's so wonderful to see. Say, instead of trying to heal somebody from his belief in penalty, well, this is really not a high standpoint, because we have to see that there is no such a universal belief. Then we take it away from the person, we take it away from the individual, and make it an issue per se. Say, well, the whole world believes in penalty. So what can handle that? Instead of handling an individual case, penalty is a claim, a universal claim. Let's handle that. If we can handle that through seeing the infinite blessing and, or what you said, the infinite compensation we have in love, love just pouring out its blessing, then we handle the universal belief of penalty at all. And we wipe it out. Yes?
You recall a place in prose where Mrs. Eddy uses the phrase the curse of love. I believe she says it wipes out hate, but she uses that, the curse of love, and I was thinking that's really taking the negative.
Yeah, exactly.
They're around the circle.
Yes, yes.
And that, there are a lot of the principal kills and truth slaves and
yes.
put them together. That's
yes.
awful.
Yeah, yes. Because she uses spiritual mathematics, huh? And negative multiplied by negative is positive, huh?
That's right.
You say that negative multiplied by negative, huh? Is positive. So love curses, but doesn't curse something positive, something negative, huh? Hate and so on. You see? Yes. Yeah. So negative multiplied is positive, huh? Yeah. All right. So yeah.
Max, could we say that we could fear the penalty of missing out on love, small l?
Yeah.
Not complete or fulfilled or satisfied because we've missed something.
Yeah, these are forms of penalty, huh? And they are naturally legion. The forms of penalty are legion. So what we are trying to see is just the very concept or belief of penalty and see it. What it is and what it is not. Yes? Okay.
Just one, I think, frightfully important.
Yeah? Oh, frightfully important. All right.
Guilt.
Guilt, yes.
Yeah,
that's another form of penalty, to feel guilty. Huh? And most people really feel either to be penalized for their what they have been doing in their life, or having a constant sense of guilt. All right. Now we have done penalty and investigated it from the various synonymous terms. And now we take the textbook. On page 384. 384, and we read together from line 3 and investigate together what Mrs. Eddy says about penalty, so that we have a measuring rod somehow, how she would analyze the belief in penalty. So I read it to you, and then we discuss it. The first paragraph is, we should relieve our minds from the depressing thought that we have transgressed a material law and must of necessity pay the penalty. Can you hear? She takes up the question of penalty. Let us reassure ourselves with the law of love. Can you see how penalty is the counterfeit of love? When we have a question of penalty, she comes in and says, what is that which handles the belief in it is the law of love. God never punishes men for doing right, for honest labor, or for deeds of kindness. Can you see that God is not the creator of punishment? Though they expose him to fatigue, cold, heat, contagion. If man seems to incur the penalty through matter, So if man seems to occur, it's first said, mind does not make any law of penalty. But if man seems that he is under the penalty, this is but a belief of mortal mind. Can you see that she defines now penalty from the point of view of mind, just as we have done, and arrives at the conclusion that that which we feel to be a penalty and seems to be a penalty is nothing else but the belief of mortal mind. Not an enactment of wisdom, not an enactment of the divine mind. Wisdom is mind. And man has only to enter his protest against this belief in order to annul it. Through this action of thought and its result upon the body, the student will prove to himself, by small beginnings, the grand verities of Christian Science. So here you have a paragraph telling us really that mind or wisdom has never created penalty, but that if we feel that we are penalized, then we must see that it is a belief of mortal mind, and that it all depends on the action of our thought, if we will have it or if we don't want to have it. Is that clear? If you look up your notes, what you have written down when we made our exercise, you more or less have in your notes the same thing. We put down that penalty is the creation of mortal mind, of the belief of mortal mind. We said that penalty is not caused and created by the divine mind. We also had that it has no power. Here we have it indicated too that it depends how we act on it, if it will have power on us or not. Do you feel you have done pretty good? Yeah? All right. So we go to the next paragraph. If exposure to a draught of air while in a state of perspiration is followed by chills, by cough, influenza, congestive symptoms in the lungs, or hints of inflammatory rheumatism, then your mind remedy is safe and sure. So she builds the bridge again, that in mind would be the remedy for it. If you are a Christian Scientist, such symptoms are not apt to follow exposure. But if you believe in laws of matter and their fatal effects when transgressed, you are not fit to conduct your case, your own case, or destroy the bad effects of your belief. And you see what she says. Now she takes up the tone of spirit and says, well, naturally, if you believe in the law of matter, and you believe that transgressing the laws of matter have bad effects, well, that's your own job, that's your own making, huh? So, indicating actually that it is only laws of matter that are transgressed, but that we should not really believe that the laws of matter can punish us. When the fear subsides and the conviction abides that you have broken no law, see, neither rheumatism, consumption, nor any other disease will ever result from exposure to the weather. In science, this is an established fact which all the evidence before the senses can never overrule. We had, when we did our exercise, we had what? We said that it's only the transgression of a mortal law that argues that it can bring punishment, and that in the law of spirit we put it down into law of spirit, that if we see the law of spirit, that we can transgress the laws of matter and not be punished. That's what she says here too. It doesn't bring in spirit as a synonymous term, but she indicates that we can transgress the laws of matter and not get rheumatism and consumption or any other disease, that we can actually transgress these laws without being punished. Can we go on? Sickness, sin, and death must at length quail before the divine rights of intelligence. And then the power of mind over the entire function and organs of the human system will be acknowledged. It is proverbial that Florence Nightingale and other philanthropists engaged in humane labors have been able to undergo, without sinking, fatigue and exposures which ordinary people could not endure. The explanation lies in the support which they derive from the divine law. How? Rising above the human. So only by rising above the human we free ourselves from the law of punishment. The spiritual demand, quelling the material, supplies energy and endurance, surpassing all other aids. It's higher, it's supreme, and forestalls the penalty which our beliefs would attach to our best deeds. Let us remember that the eternal law of right, though it can never annul the law which makes sin its own executor, exempts man from all penalties but those due for wrongdoing. Can you see? Yes. Can you see here, she brings in two aspects in regarding to penalty. Namely, the first aspect is that we can rise above the belief of penalty, and by rising above it, we are no more under the law of penalty. So soul is always that which is superior, where the greater controls the lesser, where we just rise above that soul. And second is that sin is its own executor, its own executioner. Executioner. So that sin penalizes itself. Well, when we did our exercise, I think we had these points in it. We said that in soul we rise above the law of penalty. We also could see that soul does never punish anything, that which punishes is sin itself, that sin punishes not persons, but itself. Yes. So we caught that tone also quite well, I would say. Then we go to the next. Constant toil, deprivation, exposures, and all untoward conditions, if without sin, this is in italics, can be experienced without suffering. So we can break the material law, and not be punished if without sin. Therefore, whatever it is your duty to do, can you see now that's principle, your duty to do, that's your obedience, your duty, that has all to do with principle, you can do without harm to yourself. So there is no penalty for doing right, for obedience to principle. If you sprain the muscles or wound the flesh, your remedy is at hand. Mind decides. Mind is here with a small m. This is not the capitalized mind. It's the human mind. Mind decides whether or not the flesh shall be discolored, painful, swollen, and inflamed. So here you have a very good example, what we all said, that it says that doing right, obedience to principle, obedience to principle has never a penalty, though the belief is that you are transgressing material laws. So our safety is always, or our protection is always, being in line with principle. Then nothing can really touch us. That's what we had to in our exercise. Are you quite happy about that?
Yes.
Good.